Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The show is about to begin.
Welcome to the podcast, Conscience That Made Us. Interviews and stories, tales from the bus. We love taking you back to when it all went down. The greatest live shows and that cheering crowd sound. It's Concerts, Concerts That Made Us, ConcertsThatMadeUs.com.
Hey, what's up? Willow Hollow, and this is Concerts That Made Us.
Guys, you're very welcome to Concerts That Made Us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
That's great to have you now. I'm looking forward to diving a bit into your music. So we kicked off the show with Noose With A Name. It's off your upcoming album, Bloom and Expire. It's releasing on the 31st of March via Mongrel Records. Can you tell us a bit about the track?
Well, I think the song is really self-reflective. It's a hardcore song, so like melodic hardcore. A lot of us, that's our background, our interests and stuff like that. So predominantly sonically that. Lyrically, like I said, self-reflective. It's kind of a sad song. Truly just like, it's like a monologue with myself about like my own depression. But that's essentially what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And when you're writing such lyrics, do you find it kind of therapeutic to put it down on paper?
100%. That is the, and I keep saying this, with this band, we started in COVID. So, like, we were all pretty down and out. And I've always been struggling with, like, depression more since my teen years, where it sort of came for. And this is, like, this band is just an outlet for me. to write my feelings down, to scream them in a room with my friends. And, you know, to some degree, we all feel pretty, we were feeling pretty down and out when we wrote the song. So, yeah, it's catharsis for sure.
You know, a debut album, it's obviously a big deal. You want to kind of make a statement, grab people's attention. You know, how do you approach it? How do you kind of make people stop and take notice when you're releasing your debut album?
That's hard. Let me give it to someone. Carl, you
want to help it? It was a pretty weird decision, like, to just... We started doing an EP because we were obviously a new band. And we had obviously also just met each other. Like, the way the band came together was very quick, very sudden. Facebook message, that's literally what brought us together. And it was a couple of weeks and we were in the rooms, like, trying to get stuff together and piece it together as quick as possible. And one day Ashley just said to us, you know, we had a couple songs for the EP and we kind of just kept writing and kept writing. So we had a couple in the bag. And Ashley was eventually like, you know, why don't we just do an album? And we were all like, whoa, like that's quite a big task to take. Probably just went for it and it worked. And I think we're all very proud that we managed to put all of that into one 10-track album that each of us contributed to, and each of us feel like we put everything on the line.
Yeah. And it was very much in-house as well. Like, that was something that Ashley really drove home for us. Like, he's sort of the band dad, as you can tell by his age. But, like, it's not a bad thing. Ashley's just older than we are and more seasoned as a musician, which we'll obviously get to as well. But, and it's his studio. And yeah, everything was just like done in-house, except of course for the mastering. But everything on that album is like raw. There's like barely any MIDI. I don't think there's any. Ash, I can't remember. No MIDI. So that was a thing for us, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, what kind of happened was, like Carl was saying, we had five tracks. The original idea was an EP, but he had written an additional, I think, three tracks it was, and that was sort of on the back burner for follow up EP, I suppose, you know, or a follow up release of some sort. And when I sat and I was tracking drums, and I said to the guys, I'd finished the first five, and I was like, you know, in all honesty, I think if I really push myself, I could probably learn these additionals. Let's see what that sounds like once they're done, and if they feel right, then we're good. You know, then it makes sense to include them. You know, I mean, they feel sonically in line with the others. They're a little bit more progressed, I suppose. But at the end of the day, when you know, if you order things in a certain kind of way, it doesn't come across that, like, these are newer than those, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It just comes down to track listing, you know. So yeah, we played it out that way, and the more we sort of got into the project, the more it just sort of opened up as a fuller full length kind of recording project, you know. So yeah.
And what do you hope the takeaway for listeners is when they finally get to listen to the album?
I mean, I personally hope that they take away a feeling that a lot of hard work and grind went into this thing. I mean, like Carl and Estan were saying, you know, we came together during lockdown. I'm a lot older than the other guys. So, you know, there's definitely like this experience sort of scenario that has been playing itself out during our period of working together and our period of recording in that, you know. So there's been a lot of like backwards and forwards, sort of like, I guess you could say, catfighting going on, you know, as a normal band would, but it's obviously just amplified by the fact that, you know, a lot's happened in a very short space of time because we've been working so hard and grinding so much on this, you know, and we've done it ourselves, you know, so we've taken the approach to do it ourselves, but it also comes with a lot of, you know, with strife, you know what I mean? So I hope that comes across in the raw energy and the way that the album sounds. And so I hope that people take that away from it and think, you know, like, this doesn't sound like something we've heard before, but it sounds like there's a lot of heart that went into this, you know, because I feel like everyone really, really brought their A game to something that was still so new. I mean, we'd never played a show by the time we'd done any of this. You know, we played our first show a couple of weeks ago, you know, last weekend. So, you know, there was so much that was put into the process of writing and recording, you know. So, like, it's really like we're wearing our hearts on this release and we're handing it out there. And so we're hoping people really get that, I suppose.
You know, as you've mentioned, as a band, you cut your teeth behind closed doors for the last 2 years. Now, the pandemic, I'm sure you had people saying you want to start a band in the middle of a global pandemic. Are you nuts? What was it like actually, you know, putting a band together when you actually couldn't get out there and perform?
So, I mean, the thing that we haven't really sort of spoken too much into about, you know, in any of our biography stuff was that, I mean, I actually come from a band that was pretty active prior to COVID, you know, kicking in. I mean, we played a show like 2 days before we announced lockdown. We played the last festival, I think, that South Africa had before lockdown took place, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where it was like suddenly you're brought to a grinding halt. And as lockdown kicked in, I'd also built a studio during that period. And I was back on the drums because the band I was in before, I was actually a vocalist. I was a frontman. Similar kind of style, hardcore, you know, positive, melodic kind of hardcore thing. And but during lockdown, I was like, oh, we've got to do something. So I built the studio and I got back behind the drums. And, you know, it was just an absolute need to still be creative. You know, and not wanting to slow down and let this thing grab you by the nutsack and, you know, drag you through the dirt, you know, any more than it already did, basically. You know, I mean, ultimately COVID ended my last band. You know, it was definitely a huge part of what brought the end to Truth and Its Burden, which is the band I come from. And so when I put the call out on Facebook for like, you know, hey, I'm looking for guys who are into XYZ, you know, for guys who are equally desperate to kind of, you know, really sink their teeth into something, to reach out. And I mean, it was literally like, you know, Estian like immediately reached out and he was like, well, you know, I've got this mate, Carl, you know, what do you think? And the bassist and I, Sean, we're both from Truth and Its Burden. We were just like immediately, cool, let's hook up. We did a picnic, which is pretty unhardcore, but I mean, it was a cool thing to do and a nice sort of easy way to meet people in a more relaxed, open environment. And it was the only place you could actually meet at the time because, you know, they had these restrictions and it was an outdoor place. You couldn't go to restaurants. It felt more easier to get the idea across, I suppose.
I do also think that there was a bit of a positive aspect to being locked away for such a long time. You know, the creative juices kind of flowed out from being locked there and like in your room in the dark, staring at the ceiling, no other options but to write. It kind of felt good in a way. It felt a lot darker, the music that came out. So I definitely think it had a positive aspect to the sound we were going for. Because it was so, it's like an isolation thing, you know, that whole album was kind of written in an isolated space and then brought together, here's raw ideas, what are we going to do with it? And it kind of just molded it into what it is. And I think we're all very happy with what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to ask, Ashley, what led to the decision of you stepping away from vocals, you know, and how do you approach being a drummer as compared to being the front man?
Okay. So, you know, when they speak of, you know, me being the dad in the band, like I'm 20 years older than some of the guys, just about. So, you know, I'm 40 now, but I mean, so I come from the punk scene and I originally played drums. When I first started playing in bands when I was about 17 or so, I was formerly a drummer. So I'd gotten into vocals purely because I signed up for the drummer spot and the band I was trying out for said, look, sorry, we just found our guy. And I picked up the phone back, phoned them again. I said, listen, do you have a vocalist? And they were like, no, we don't have a vocalist. And I like, so I signed up and I got the job straight away. They were into it and I was like, okay, rad. And that pretty much meant that I was suddenly off the drums for what would end up being around, you know, 15, 16 years. So I've always genuinely wanted to be back on the drums. But I'd never had a home studio, for one, you know. And I mean, you know, drums are extremely loud. They're very abrasive instruments to play, you know, in close proximity to neighbors and whatnot. So, you know, I'd never had that, you know, opportunity. And, you know, we bought our home a couple of years ago. And like I said, you know, I just built the studio during lockdown and I had a kit because I had the intention of doing this. But then lockdown happened and I was like, well, cool, let's do this. And I just got back behind the kit and I was like, you know, my own band, Truth Must Burden, we'd put that thing on ice and we were like, look, I don't know when this thing's going to come back on. And I was like, look, I need to do something and I need to play drums. And that's what I felt like I've been wanting to do for so long. It's now time to seize that opportunity, you know. And I'm really grateful though that it worked the way it worked, because I got into an opportunity to work with someone like Carl who writes most of the music, well, writes all the music, except the lyrics, of course. But and he writes all the drum parts, obviously, on his computer. But he's doing it as someone who's got a keen mind and understanding of how drums come together, you know, as far as playability is concerned. So it made that process so much easier, whilst at the same time challenging me in all the right ways. And also we were behind closed doors. So like I could suck and no one would know, you know, and that's the reality, you know, I could suck for a long time and no one would care because we weren't playing shows. So I was afforded the opportunity to get better at what I was doing without being in the public eye, so to speak. So obviously now it's a whole different vibe, and you know, obviously I'm playing more on the level I should have been. But it was for me a great experience to finally get back behind the kit, and I've just grown so much more as a musician during this time doing it, for sure.
I think with everything that's been said, like I think Carl and I mean. Him and I were always making music, right? Before we met Ash. And like, it never really came to fruition. We had our own band going. And with the way things were before lockdown, it actually afforded us like a place to practice with this old band. And things were just starting to get together. And in a blink of an eye, everything just went to shit. And Carl and I also, like Ashley said, just this ultimate need for creativity. And like, I think him and I, because we're both pretty young, still in our 20s, back then we were like in our early 20s. Carl was like 19 or something. And we were just super ambitious. We were like, we've got to make music, we've got to do this band thing. Like, and we just had such a clear idea of what it was supposed to be. And like, miraculously met Ash, and like, the South African, like, hardcore scene is very small. So to meet someone who puts out this public post, like, and I knew who Ashley was because of Truth and Burden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I grew up listening to Truth and Burden. So when he saw that, and I'd been doing covers and Carl and I had been doing our own, like, it's sort of just home studio styled stuff. And I immediately reached out to him, and man, the process has been wild. Like, we're just learning so much, every one of us. I think Carl and Ashley, like, we're learning a lot from Ashley, his experience and his background in the music scene. And Carl and I are just, like, showing Ashley all this new tech. Like, dude, you know, dude, like, you know, you can actually, like, click and there's, like, a drum noise. And it actually sounds pretty good. So there was that, like, ultimate exchange between, like, the old school way of doing things and the new school way of doing things. And I really think we reconciled that with this album.
Yeah, that's a cool way to put it, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like the perfect mixture, actually. You know, all the new and, yeah. It's definitely doesn't leave much reason for it not to work out anyway. And at this stage, so I like to dive into my guest's personal journey when it comes to music. So if you can, Can you remember your very first musical memory?
I know I can. I was 7 years old, and my mother was on the telephone, probably speaking to, you know, one of her siblings or whatever. And AC/DC's Thunderstruck came up on the TV. And I mean, like I said, I was 7 years old. And I don't know if you know, I'm sure you know the video, but like there's this cage kind of vibe that they've got going on, you know, where people are like sort of above them on like these different levels. And they're like sort of like watching over this band doing Thunderstruck and whatnot. And I just remember with my little child mind looking at the scene, and I was just like, fuck me, this is the real thing, you know, this is it, you know, this is it, you know.
Yeah.
And like just so captivated by what I'd seen as a, I mean, like I was of course doing, you know, the Angus Young, you know, he does that little dance thing with the guitar thing, you know. the bouncing, the hopping on one foot thing. And I just immediately was like, wow, this is amazing. And then like got back to school and recognized that there were a couple of kids who were into, you know, like Iron Maiden and Alice Cooper and, you know, Guns N' Roses and Metallica and all these bands. And like, so started, you know, getting into it, you know, from a very, very young age. I mean, like very young age. So, and I had older brothers as well. So, you know, music was always filtering through. But that first moment where I saw AC/DC on TV, and they're still such a big deal to me in my life. I mean, you know, absolutely love them, you know. And so, yeah, that's my story.
I love that you said AC/DC and not something like the Bee Gees or something like that.
I mean, hey, it could have been. My dad was into the Bee Gees. To be truth be told, I actually have a Bee Gees CD in my collection.
Right.
So I'm definitely into it.
Guilty pleasure.
Oh, and guys, what about you? What's your earliest musical memories?
I think I remember my first experience with heavy music. I used to love wrestling. I used to be a big wrestling
fan. Still do, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I still watch it every now and then. So, like, just a nostalgia thing. But I used to record them. We had this, like, PVR thing where you could record shows. And every weekend I would set the different – I would, like, spend an hour going through the schedule and, like, okay, it's on at this time, at this day, and this time. And I would record as many episodes as I could. And then I would like mission home from school, try and get home as quick as possible just to sit down and watch wrestling. There was this wrestler called CM Punk. I'm sure we all know CM Punk. But he used to walk out to, I can't even remember the band, Killswitch Engage.
Metalcore. Yeah,
it was Killswitch Engage. And it was just beautiful to hear. And I was like super scared at the same time. I used to keep it on the down low because my parents would probably be like, oh, what's this screaming going on? And you should be listening to this. And so I think it was also that little feeling of having to keep it a secret and keep it a mystery that made it so appealing. But yeah, Killswitch Engage.
Oddly enough, I have a similar story, right? And like, this is my first memory with heavy music. I started actually with like bands like Green Day and Sum 41, just like watching MTV after school. And back then, pop punk was kind of big, like the early 2000s. And then Sum 41 gripped my attention. But Headbangers Ball on MTV, right? I'd get home and my mom would be home. But I would watch that. And I remember seeing bands like Chimera, and that's like my first, and Demo Boogie, like all this black metal, and these, because back then there was like music videos on television, right? And I would like close the door and make sure my parents didn't hear, because came out of like a very Christian household. So yeah, there was a lot of like, there's that fear aspect to it. But that's probably Headbangers Ball. That's my first.
It kind of shows you the age gap that Ashley is. Like, this one was like the TV, and we were all seeing our music on like the TV and recording shows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Some cool ones there, though. And, you know, I'm always saying your teenage years is when it happens with music. It's when you find your genre, you find your community. everything. So what sort of music were you guys being exposed to by your peers, and how do you think it affected you becoming the musician you are today?
I mean, for me, it was, I was into like all sorts of stuff because, like I said, I had older brothers. So like I was getting filtered through music from them, gothic rock bands like Christian Death, Alien Sex Fiend, and, you know, like weird shit, you know, like stuff that a kid my age shouldn't have been into, you know, but yeah, I mean, it was stuff that was filtering through, Typo Negative, you know, all those kind of, you know, sort of more gothic rock bands. And then like punk was also a big thing. I got into punk a lot because it's just something that like really resonated with me as a young drummer, but it also resonated with me just from like an attitude perspective, you know. I like my earliest punk band that I was really into was Rancid. I mean, I saw the video for Salvation by Rancid, and I just saw these like guys wearing like shitty clothes, and I came from a shitty part of the country where like there wasn't a lot of money, and there was, you know, you were just a scumbag, and you know, we were skateboarders, and like, you know, so the skate punk thing then became part of that thing. And so bands like NoFX, Pennywise, you know, they all sort of got thrown in the same mix. No Use for a Name, Strung Out, a whole string of punk bands. But at the same time, this is happening, the nu metal thing is exploding. And I mean, we used to watch, I'm sure it was a global thing, Super Rock. I think the chick's name was like a blonde chick who used to host the thing, Julia Vallée or something like that.
Yeah. And,
yes. Yes. Yeah. You remember that. But she used to host the show. And I mean, so, you know, we were getting introduced to bands like Deftones, you know, System of a Down, and Korn, obviously a big one, you know. So the nu metal thing was exploding at the same time as the punk thing was exploding, you know. And I was always into bands like, I mean, my first real love for like a really heavy band was definitely Sepultura, you know. So, you know, it was all these kinds of things that were sort of, in some way or another, like interconnected, but also their own scenes, you know what I mean? So, you know, I was just into all sorts of music, you know, I mean, and then there's the AC/DCs and the Alice Coopers and the Guns N' Roses. You know, I never really sort of, I never said to myself, you have to be one thing and one thing only. You know, like I always said, you know, I mean, I still love Bon Jovi because like that was a thing for me, you know, and I still have his CDs, you know, and I still care about all those little things that kind of, you know, made up the DNA of me as a musician and me as a music appreciator, you know? So, but yeah, there's just so many, man. But it was all exploding at the same time, you know, those, the Nirvanas and all that shit, you know, the Metallica and everything. It was just, we're just soaking up as much as we could for the time period, you know, even now I'm still soaking up so much. I mean, these dudes introduced me to Fit for an Autopsy not long ago, and that shit consumed me for like a year straight. I mean, there's no question about it. That's all I listened to last year, and I only just found it. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Guys, what about you? I wonder if there'll be if the age gap will show in this answer.
Definitely.
Sure.
All my friends used to listen to rap, so I was never really exposed to heavy music from my peers. Etienne, when I was grade 8, you guys probably use grades or standards. I'm sure.
It's grade 12.
Yeah, so I was grade 8 and Etienne was grade 12. And we have these traditions in our schools where a grade 12 picks like a grade 8 student and kind of mentors them through that first year of high school, carrying their bags and doing all that stuff. And I was into... In the late stages of primary school, I was listening to like Bullet for My Valentine and Slipknot and stuff like that. And when I got to grade 8, you can kind of tell when someone listens to that kind of music. And Esther had all these holes in his face and he had like hair going over his eyes.
Typical,
yeah, typical scene kid. And he kind of latched onto me as a little kid, and I kind of latched onto him as a mentor. And it never really... nothing really ever happened in that stage. It was just more of a me keeping my distance and seeing what they were doing. And I was exposed to it from the older kids more than I was my peers. My sister was same grade as him and all his friends, so there was that connection. My sister was kind of in that realm of things, and Yeah, I was exposed to it from not the people who are my friends. So there's, I guess, the age gap is that I should have not been in the scene that I'm in. I mean, I was born in 99, so the 2000s, for all my friends, when metalcore and stuff like that was popping off, we were kids. I only got into it after the whole scene exploded, and I'm very disappointed that happened. I would have loved to have been the little emo kid.
The 08.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I was 9 years old.
That was like the year of metalcore.
Yeah, no chance. And then after that, I went to a local show, the first show I'd ever been to, first metal show I'd ever been to, and Esther was there. And he was like, yo, you're still doing it. You still listen to metal. You're still about it. And I was like, yeah, man. After not having seen him in probably 4 years.
4 or 5 years.
And that night he was like, let's start a band. And we tried, failed many times.
So many times.
Went through like 3 internet projects. And eventually we found Ashley. And Ashley was like, there's no way this is failing. Stick it through. And we're sticking it through.
Yeah, I also think like with my influence, it was definitely, like I said, pop punk that started for me. There was like this wave in the early 2000s with bands like Green Day, Sum 41, Blink 182 was everywhere. Like every movie had a pop punk song in it. It just felt like that. Every teenage movie. And like, I think I heard Sum 41 at the end of an American Pie movie. And I was like, this is the shit. I dig this kind of music. And,
you know, I remember grade 4, I was like, I was quite a disruptive kid at school. And I struggled with grades in my earlier years. And I remember my mom saying to me, if you get, if you get like a distinction on this math paper, I'll buy you a CD. And I was like, cool, a CD of my choice. And then ended up getting American Idiot from Green Day, and then it just went all downhill from there. And I remember a friend of mine at school, I think it was in 7th grade, then played me Bullet for My Valentine. At the time, I think that was, had to be like 2009 2008, and then I was like, this is the shit. This is like a step up from what I had already been listening to. And then it was just metalcore, and it went like, I went through like heavier stages of music as well. So I was definitely into like the dark side of it, but I also feel myself like slowly approaching 30. Like I found myself enjoying things like hardcore more, just a little bit more refined than the just disgustingly heavy stuff. It's like a bit of a whiskey, but that's pretty much it for me, or how it was for me.
Yeah. And as a concert goer, what concerts would you say have made you?
Oh, okay. Well, I think I'll just take this one off the bat, because there was the first time I saw a local band, and I'm going to shout them out, probably still to this day, one of my favorite local bands, but it was The Dead Will Tell. And they were playing at Dingy Bar with another band called Chromium, who sounds, funnily enough, like they were like a replica of Bullet for My Valentine. So I actually went to go watch them. And then I came across this band that was headlining that night, The Dead Will Tell. And I was super young. I think I'd snuck out to go watch the show. So again, that sense of like, I'm not supposed to be doing this. And these dudes were super cool. Like they were younger guys and they were just killing it. Like over the top breakdowns and over the top riffs. And I was so drawn to that as well. I'll never forget that first local show. It's the reason I'm doing music now.
It's a good one, Saul. It's a good one. And Ashley, Carol?
I haven't seen a lot of bands. I've seen up to the local scene like too many times. But I love all our local bands like Facing Gallows, Red Ellen, who, I don't really play anymore, which I miss dearly. I think the first show I went to was a Red Helen show, and it blew my mind. It was crazy to see. It was a free show as well. No stage. They played like a floor
show. So they were like in your face. First mosh pit, like, it was crazy. FTG, every time we watch Facing the Gallows, we throw down. They homies of ours as well, so we always have a good time watching them. And now it's kind of cool to be in that universe, you know, the universe where you're actually going to shows to play instead of, it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, you know, like I said, because I started in the punk scene. Those were my formative years. I used to play in this punk band called Ceasefire. And I was the drummer and the singer for the band. I mean, we were super shit, but we were cool in our own way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we had this vibe, but we played with a lot of bands like Fuzzy Gish and Leak of the Bouncing Uptones and Hum for the Teacup and all these, like, you know, I mean, some of these bands are actually still going today. Fuzzy Gish, namely, one of them.
Yeah, I've actually had them on the show.
Oh, well, then you know, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
I mean, they are like. I mean, they've been flying the flag for years, you know, and but they're, I mean, we played our first show with them, you know, that was my first show ever, like, was playing in a show, that is. And I just remember feeling so genuinely alive at a punk show that, like, and I've never got that from a metal show or, you know, a rock show or anything else. Like, it may be a hardcore show because they're so similar in certain ways. But like this, there's something so unique to me about punk rock that I think a lot of other scenes could, I don't know, maybe take a leaf out of that book. It's just so unifying, and it's I don't know, it's so free to really kind of experience something for what it is and not feel any sort of judgment or condemnation. And I'm talking way back then already, you know. You know, I mean, maybe now everything sort of seems a little bit more sort of like open and more inclusive. But I mean, you couldn't go to a metal show back in those days and feel like you were part of it. I can tell you that right now. Like those days, it was like, you know, you've got to go in there full black, ready to kill people, just about. That's how it felt. You know, it felt like you really had to prove your worthiness of even being in the venue. Whereas punk shows just felt like, you know, everyone's welcome. We just want to have fun. And it was just circle pits, man. Like, geez, man. Like Fuzzy Gish was just like a full hour of like just circle rotation. Like, it was insane. Like, their shows are still, in many cases, they're still just like those old days, you know, which is incredible for them to still have that same appeal and that same crowd response, you know. So yeah, I mean, for me, it's definitely the punk scene has always had a really special place in my heart because it's cemented my love for the live music scene overall, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned you played your first gig last weekend. Tell us all about it. Make us feel like we were actually at it.
we had so many issues going into it. I mean, like, yeah, it was riddled with issues, but at the same token, it was full of like joyous moments and actual genuine success, you know. I mean, like, I don't know if you know much about South Africa right now, but we're experiencing what's called load shedding.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've heard about this.
I have.
Where we go like rolling blackouts for like 2 hours, you know, and then another 4 hours later on where there's no power. And like, we arrived at the venue for the schedule, you know, load in and sound check. And yeah, we arrived to a venue that had no power, you know, and so, you know, you set up and you wait around, you know, basically. And which kind of just threw the whole show out of whack. And I mean, we eventually got everything together and it was all good. And then it was just like issues with like the card payment machine to run the door with, you know, and so we had that issue, you know. So it was just like, kind of like, it just felt like, yes, man, like, just give us a break. It's our first show. Like, but I mean, these things are good at the same token, you know, like they do set you up for the reality of what it is again, you know. And I know I needed a wake up call, or a reminder, a healthy reminder of what it's like to play, you know, regular venues and the kind of, you know, challenges we face, you know. But I mean, challenging scenarios aside, it was a really cool show. You know, a lot of family came out to the show to support us. I mean, like, two of the members, Chad and myself, the other guitarist and myself, we're part of a local church here. And I mean, so many dudes from our church actually came out and supported us. And it was genuinely cool, you know, to have like friends and family. And like, you know, I know Estienne and Carl and Sean, they're mates with like a lot of the guys from like, you know, the other bands, like regularly going and seeing their shows. And so like all those dudes were there, the guys from Face of the Gallows, I know Starb was there as well, and like a whole bunch of dudes from like the scene that were there to just kind of like cheer us on and see what we're all about, you know, see what the hype's about, or just check out the new band, you know, the new kids on the block or whatever, you know. So it was really cool to have their support and to, you know, to usher in a new era of you know, this band, you know, as musicians working together, you know, a new era of me playing drums, and this is it, you know, whatever it is, it was really cool, you know. And I'm just grateful we got the opportunity to share it with a lot of people that were friends and close to us that came out and saw that, you know.
Couldn't have said it better, Ashley.
And do you guys have your second gig lined up and ready to go?
Yeah, we've got a few actually. I suppose now that people have seen us, it's a little bit easier to sort of like judge whether we'd suit your show or not, you know. So yeah, a couple of promoters have actually reached out to us. So we've got like three or four you know, lined up at the moment. So but I mean, you know, like I've always been one of those guys, like, I mean, for years and years and years, I've promoted tours and concerts and, you know, that kind of thing, you know. So I've always been very pro DIY, and I, you know, what if we never had the opportunity to get onto shows that were, you know, offered to us, you know, we would right now, we would be booking our own, you know, and just make carving our own path, you know, which we will be doing in any case, you know. So we definitely plan to have a busy year, even though it doesn't seem that way right this moment. But yeah, we're definitely going to be a pretty strong touring band, you know, in years to come, actually very soon to come. So yeah, we're all about that for sure.
Yeah. Brilliant. Good to hear. And you guys can use any gig that you've played now from the past for these next two questions. But is there a gig experience that you would revisit over and over again as, you know, it just went perfectly? You can't top it.
I'm going. It was the first show. Me and Esther kind of played in this noise band. Choking on Heartbeat, and they were around for a long time back in the day. Most of the members were older than us, so they kind of went on a hiatus for a couple of years, and they came back and they needed a guitarist, and they reached out to me, or they actually needed a bassist first. Esto set me up with some of the dudes, and I started playing bass for them, and their guitarist ended up leaving, so I kind of moved over to guitar. And Esto played no instrument at all. And they were like, yes, okay, you were a drummer. And they eventually, we needed a bassist because I was not playing guitar. And I was like, let's get Esto. And they were like, okay, cool. We got practice next Wednesday. Let's see what he does. And that Friday, like the Friday before, me and Esto drove out to some, like an hour's drive somewhere to go pick up a bass that we'd found on Facebook. And Estienne played bass for a weekend, and he then joined the band. And everyone obviously loved Esther and his vibe. And so he just joined the band. And probably like 3 weeks, 4 weeks after that, we played our first show back. Everyone obviously knew the band, and everyone was very hyped to have them back. We were new members, so no one really knew about us. But we played with Facing the Gallows, quite a big band in the country. They headlined. And for the first show that I'd ever played on stage, and Estienne had featured for like Volvidinia and a couple of his friends' bands at Cranked Up and stuff like that. But it was the first show that we were ever playing as a band together. And me particularly, I'd never been on stage in front of everyone, like in front of anyone before. And they ended up packing out that venue. There were like 200 to 250 people there.
It was a small venue, and
like really small. It was
like sardines, man.
They packed everyone in there, and we fucking whipped it. We just went hard. We didn't play too well, but we were like throwing out. It's a very energetic band. So throwing your shit around, fucking hitting the floor and spitting and, you know, all that hard shit that you try and do. And so we were doing that. And Ashley even drove out from Benoni to come watch us. And
was that the show I went to? I didn't even know that was
the show. It was about that one. I saw you there in between sets. Like Ashley was just looking. He was like, okay. So that was, obviously we were ready behind closed doors. We had already started this project, and that's why I actually had come through to watch. But that show, for the first show that I'd ever been, and I'd been looking forward to it for years. I mean, I've always wanted to be in a band, and I've always wanted to play in front of people. And that moment, it was crazy. It was the most intense feeling I've ever felt. You get bit by the bug super hard. And, I mean, the rest of my life is going to be chasing that feeling. That show was nuts.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Unforgettable.
I fucked up all my parts. It was great. I hope you can swear. I said a couple of curse words, but that's just how passionate I was about that. That feeling that you get, it's indescribable.
I think it would be lame to say that same gig, because that was the first time I'd actually ever played a full set on stage. Up until then, it was just like featuring for friends, you know, just getting on stage and doing a couple lines of a song, because I'd always fancied myself as like the vocalist type. I suppose I am. But yeah, I was also chasing that dream, but then ended up playing my first full set as a bassist. And I'd only been a bassist for like a couple months. And it actually worked out really well. I think the only difference is I feel like I played really well that night and I had a blast. Carl didn't play well, but he still had a blast. But yeah, it's definitely that moment, because that's when it also became real to me. And unfortunately, since that band that we were playing for has, again, just dispersed, the guys were old, and it was just sort of like a comeback show. So now we were left with, you know, just this project, and it's like constantly chasing that feeling, I think, because of that moment, for sure.
Yeah, so my old band, Truth Must Burn, we got to tour Europe, you know, twice. On the second time we were out there, we got one of the tour dates was playing at Brutal Assault Festival in Czech Republic. And it was the year Machine Head were headlining. And to date, I would definitely put that down as by far the most perfect moment that I've ever experienced on stage. It was such a weird situation, because like we were a very positive band. We were definitely by far the lightest band on that festival. I mean, it's a very dark, like black metal mostly, you know, or like just very extreme metal, like in general, you know what I mean? Those kinds of bands tend to play that festival, and that's the staple idea there. And we played this tent stage, but what was amazing about it was that, we had the same time slot as Dimmu Borgir on, they were playing main stage and we were doing this tent thing. And like automatically you're in a place like this. I mean, I might joke about it to say it felt like it was like Hell's Crypt, but it like at times it felt like we were definitely in Satan's lair, you know. It was just super hectic, you know, like if you could just imagine, like just everyone like wearing face paint, and it's like broad fucking daylight, man. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and it's just like all this black around you, you know, like, you know, total metal to the max, you know, and to play that show, and then like people were like, you know, screaming for encores, and like, you know, they just wanted more and more and more. Like, and it was just, I mean, I remember like finishing off that set, and like I was just like, you know, we were shaking hands with people, and like, you know, really sort of like you felt like this incredibly huge band. I mean, the tent was packed, everybody was cheering. It was quite an incredible moment. And like I remember like just crying on stage, and I was just like, I couldn't believe that in a place as dark as this, that a band with the kind of positive way that I've always written positive lyrics as the front man, and I've always spoken up about it, you know, and it's always been that. And to feel like there was a real moment where you connected with an audience in a place like that was quite something. It was quite, it felt like a real leveling moment, you know, like I felt super humbled by everything that I'd experienced, you know. I mean, over and above that, it was incredibly cool. Like, you know, just the whole vibe at that festival was electrifying. I mean, I'd never experienced something on that level. That's for sure. It was very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to ask, how does European gigs and crowds compare to South Africa?
Well, I mean, for the most part, the kind of shows that we would have played with Truth Must Burden, you know, it's kind of similar, I would say. I mean, unless you're playing a festival, then of course it's definitely not the same. Because those attendances for those festivals are huge in comparison, you know. And the lineups are of course, you know, the crowd pulling kind of lineups. But the normal club shows, I mean, like we would play a show we played with Unearth. You know, we played with a whole string of like well-known bands, you know, Wilhelm Scream, Unearth, I'm trying to think who else we played with, but like, it's kind of like the same attended kind of shows that you'd get in South Africa, you know, like the same kind of crowd would be there. More or less the same kind of response would be there. Like, these are the shows we were playing, of course. So, I mean, obviously we weren't playing arenas. We weren't playing those kind of bigger shows, I suppose. I mean, Unearth were playing the show we played with them was a club show. Every show we played was, unless it was a festival, was a club show. So, you know, we weren't getting like bigger opportunities, but I mean, they were all kind of the same vibe, you know? I love the European scene for so many reasons, because there's just a real sense of community and how shows come together. You know, both times I've been out there, you know, it's like the venues are able to accommodate the band with, you know, a place to stay, stuff like that, you know. That's a huge thing, you know. Bands actually get paid, you know. There's like set fees. They can guarantee that, you know what I mean, whether there's people at the show or not. And I think it's got something to do, and I don't know if it's still like that, but I remember hearing that at the time there was some sort of like government thing where like there was an entertainment fee that they were paying to venues to help sort of subsidize things and keep the entertainment scene alive. So they would give venues money to pay artists to do these things. And so it just meant that bands could comfortably not stress about anything, you know, and work on a door deal kind of thing, where like you go to UK and it's same as back home. You go to USA, it's even worse. It's like hard. You know, those countries, like I felt like UK was incredibly difficult to tour. I felt like USA was so tough, man. So tough. You would drive through cities and just nothing. You wouldn't be able to get a show. Guys would drop off shows, like, you know, they'd cancel the show last minute, like night before, stuff like that, you know. So like there was a lot of that kind of thing. Where in Europe, it's like it's done, it's a sure thing. You know you're getting the show, you know you're getting paid. So you can route your tour in such a way where you know, like, cool, like we're covered for gas, we're covered for whatever we need, you know, like it's cool, you know. At least back then. I mean, it's different now, I'm sure, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And before we dive into the last couple of questions, what are your future plans? I know the album is coming out the end of March and you've mentioned a couple of tour or a couple of gigs lined up. Is there anything else on the cards?
Tour, baby. We definitely want a tour. We're definitely a band that wants to get in a van and just drive. Mm-hmm. So I think something we have on our radar is probably a local tour. We got a couple bands who we're friends with or who we know of in a couple of different provinces here. So I think travel down there and experience what that's about for us youngsters. I think we definitely want to experience that and gain the experience and learn from Ashley. And Ashley's obviously renowned in his life of touring and bringing bands here and touring with those bands. And we definitely want to learn that from Ashley and put it into, you know, this while we still can. So tour, I think that's
true. And also hopefully new music. We've got some stuff in the pocket that we are sneakily working on. I think there was a lot of kinks in the road to where we are now, but we've worked a lot of them out. So and in the time of working all of those out, we've actually had time to actually sit on new music as well. So the process is a little bit more streamlined.
So yeah, definitely hoping to come out with new music as soon as possible and just get on the road, get our name out there. Yeah, that's all we can do. And just have fun. Have fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing about where we are right now is, and I know that we amongst ourselves have had this discussion a fair few times, you know, with regards to new music. I mean, the reality is like, yes, cool. We've been doing this for like, you know, a year and a half, nearly 2 years behind closed doors and writing this music and recording it and whatnot. But everybody's hearing this now for the very first time, you know, so it's brand new to everybody else. Whereas it kind of, it does have that older kind of feel in us. And so, you know, there is a deep understanding that like, we do need to tour it and we do need to get it out there. We need to get these, give these songs the daylight that they deserve. We're very proud of what we've done with the music that we've written up to now. There's no question about it. But there's definitely obviously, and this just comes down to a state of the times we live in, you know, people generally want new music a lot sooner than they used to ever want it in the past, you know? So you constantly have to release new music to stay relevant. There's a huge drive now for musicians to stay relevant, you know? And so it comes unfortunately with the, you know, constantly having to write music and constantly be focused on that. Whilst at the same time, you're still trying to live life. You're still trying to organize tours and set up future plans. But we definitely plan on you know, releasing new music within this year for sure. Even though the album's coming out within this year, like we want to keep the pulse, you know, moving forward. You know, we want the machine to be well oiled as a touring unit, but we also want to be able to say that, like, you know, we're releasing new material, whether that's, you know, maybe a music video that's coming out. We're keen to obviously form a full production music video very soon, you know, and get ourselves more set in stone on, you know, putting ourselves legitimately on the map as a full scale band that does that. And who knows? I mean, you know, like there's always the option to maybe head overseas, you know, and, you know, I've spoken about Europe a fair few times to the guys, you know, and who knows? I mean, maybe an opportunity, you know, opens itself up, and I'd certainly love to see it again. And I'd certainly love to do it with this band. You know, I think it could definitely be something that we could gain a lot from, you know, life experience. And, you know, I feel like the music we're playing right now, I kind of feel like it really fits that market very well. I mean, I hope I'm not wrong. Of course, every band would say that, you know, but I really hope I'm not wrong. And I'd like to think that we would have a place there that would, you know, open up a path for us, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I was hoping I wasn't going to ask now, but I was hoping you would mention maybe in the future coming over to Europe, because I reckon you guys would kill it over here anyway. It'd be awesome to see you guys make it over here. So fingers crossed.
We're definitely keen.
Yeah.
I'm dreaming. Ireland, baby. I'm just enamored by the culture in Europe. I myself spent 2 years in France in my high school years, and was fortunate enough to see a lot of bands that I looked up to at the time. And yeah, just like I said, enamored by the community, that side that we really actually all have a passion for here, that exists here, but there's a desperate need for bands to make a precedence and do something like that and actually make Europe work out for them. There's only a handful of metal bands that and rock bands that have like actually successfully done it, you know. Truth and Its Burden being one of them. I mean, they afforded themselves the opportunity to go twice. So I don't see why it would be out of the cards for us. It's a pipe dream for sure. It's like, that's a fairy tale to me, but it's very possible. Very possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you make it over here, I'll be the first one in the front row. So we'll dive into the last couple of questions. So, if you could see any performer from history for one night only in concert, who would it be?
Misery Signals.
Right. I like the quick response there.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to say one of these huge big bands from overseas that I looked up to, but there's something I've always regretted growing up. There's this band that I love from South Africa called Freedom for Your Life. And I never got to see them. And I still to this day, I met their guitarist the other day at a show where Choking Heart Beat played, and their guitarist watched us play. And the whole night I was thinking about, like, I wish the roles were reversed. I wish I didn't play that night, and I wish I got to watch Freedom for Your Life. They were one of the coolest bands that I'd ever heard, and I was too young and too frail to ever go and watch them. And everyone who I now hang out with tells stories of how good that band was. And yeah, so the local scene, I'll stick there.
I'm going to throw a curveball. I would love to see Frank Sinatra in any whiskey lounge.
I definitely wasn't expecting that.
No, likewise. That is top
class.
Honestly, a private truck.
Also, the first time Frank Sinatra has been mentioned on the podcast.
There we go.
It was bound to happen at some stage, I suppose.
Yeah.
Let me say, it's not even a guilty pleasure. No guilt.
Right. And the next one. So if you had to spend 24 hours locked inside a room with any musician or performer from history, who would it be?
Brendan Murphy from Counterparts. Seems like such a funny dude, but also he's like so seriously funny that you would never know if he's being serious or not. And I relate to that feeling a lot. Obviously, I'm a big Counterparts fan as well, so I'd love to talk to him about music and influence and all of that stuff. But I think
that's Misery Signals.
I think Brendan Murphy's personified character as a person, who he is as a frontman. It's hilarious, but it's sad at the same time. Not in a bleak way, but yeah, you can just see he's got his struggles that he works through, and he puts that into his music. And it's what him and Counterparts have done is inspiring. And I look up to that band a lot. So me and Brendan Murphy in a room.
I think for me, another curveball, Robert Johnson, the King of Blues. I want to know what he did at the crossroad. And I want to pray for him. I think it'd be a very interesting conversation as well. It's just a character soaked in history and culture. So,
yeah, actually, that would be a cool one. Another unexpected one, but yeah, I'd love even just getting an hour with him. Imagine what you could learn.
He is shrouded in secrecy. Like, I'm so intrigued by that guy's life and his story. So yeah. I definitely think that'd be a zinger.
definitely.
I mean, I'd maybe go with someone like, you know, just because it was like, you know, first real love of anyone who was ever a musician. I'd probably say Lars Ulrich from Metallica.
Really?
Yeah, really, man. I'd like, you know. Like he interests me in the sense that, like, I mean, obviously, like the first drummer that I ever really looked up to, and when I felt like, you know, I want to be a drummer was Metallica. You know, the first time I heard the Black Album, I was like, wow, this guy's, you know, he's got something special, you know. And I think a lot of people like discredit the shit out of him, you know, and I find that a little bit sad. You know, I mean, I understand that, like, you know, he's made a couple of bad moves here and there, you know, the whole Napster thing and all that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, was it bad? Was it good? You know, that remains to be, you know, seen, whatever. But, you know, it's up to your own opinion, I suppose. But, like, I think he's got a lot of interesting things that he's about, you know. Like, he's an artist as well, you know, like, and he's brought an incredible amount to the music scene as a whole. You know, but at the same time, he's hated by so many. I just love to find out, like, how he genuinely feels about that. Like, you know, if, you know, you're talking about, you know, locked in a space, someone like, you know, kind of, I'd love to see him in a vulnerable state. Let me put it to you that way. and actually have him explain like how that feels to have so many people hate you, you know, but at the same token, you know, like you're in the biggest metal band in the world, you know, like how does that feel? Those two completely opposite scenarios, like how does one person actually handle that? Like, cause I think that's quite a human thing, you know, on so many levels. And like a lot of people subtract that from the artist. They don't think, well, you know, geez, you know, this guy who's getting the shit ragged out of him constantly is still a human being with real feelings, you know. He might put a front up when he's on, you know, Howard Stern show or, you know, doing an interview or whatever he's doing, you know, but at the same token, like he deals with a lot, I would say, you know, and I'd just love to know like how he manages to deal with that, you know, without completely falling apart every time, you know, someone brings up St. Anger's Snare.
Yeah. You know, kind of thing. Yeah. That's a good one. I've never actually thought of actually. That would be a very interesting 24 hours. Yeah. And the final one. So what song would appear on the soundtrack to your life?
You Shook Me All Night Long, AC/DC.
Right.
Yeah, they'll carry my coffin out the church, man, to that song for sure. Everybody who knows me well knows that about me. Like that's the song they're gonna bury me to for sure.
Has to be that one song.
Yeah, it's that one song, man. Like it's the best riff. Like comes down to a riff. Like when you listen to that song, like it just says everything is going to be okay. Like, doesn't matter how shit anything is in your life. You play that song and you just feel like an immediate like wave just take over your body and like, okay, rad, like it's all good. You know, and that's how I feel with that song, you know, and I want people to feel that same thing. You know, I want them to walk out that church smiling because you know what, this song has fucking nothing to do with death. It has nothing. Well, maybe it's got something to do with life. Cause you know, they're all talking about shagging, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, it's a great song.
Yeah, true.
I think mine would be How Bizarre by OMC.
Right.
How Bizarre. Yeah, that's just like my general response to life. I think it's also like embedded in my childhood, like my parents always listening to that song out having, you know, fries. Barbecues. So yeah, How Bizarre by OMC, because life is bizarre. Quite a tough one. I think I need a couple of years to kind of think about it. Other dudes are so much older than me.
One song.
They've had time to think about it.
Just one song.
One song doesn't even. I hate the sound of car keys. Kawanashi.
Okay.
Very, very underground band. No one really knows that band. Ashley, in fact, gives me a lot of shit for liking that band. He thinks they're horrible. But I think they're fucking rad. And I would love to listen to them for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Listen, guys, it's been an absolute blast. I've really enjoyed chatting with you now for the last hour.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
And a lot of fun.
I hope these words will find their way to rid the room beneath your skin. You've been for one. Choose your luxury. We'll choose our hate. But so it is contained in the soil alone. Selfish satisfaction. You dug your grave again. A place to waste away your fate into nothing. I tried to wash from your lips and found nothing of substance. The way you
Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify. And if you're interested in signing up the Band Builder Academy, use the link in the show notes below and enter the code CONCERTS and you'll receive 10% off. So, until next time, keep rockin'.
Hey. Hey, what are you guys still doing here? The show's over. It's over. You can go home. Go on. We'll see you next time. We'll be here. Bye.